I wanted to share tonight, I wanted to speak tonight from the Torah portion, which is Ki Tisa, just three verses. So if you have a Bible with you, you can turn to Shemot, to Exodus chapter 31, and we have the last verse of Exodus 31, and then two verses from Exodus 32. Vayiten Moshe kechalotzo ledaber ito b'har Sinai shnei luchot ha'edut luchot even ketuvim be'etva Elohim. Vayach ha'am kivoshesh Moshe laredet min ha'har vayikahel ha'am al Aharon vayomru elav kum ase lanu Elohim asher yelchu lefanenu. Ki ze Moshe ha'ish asher ha'alanu me'eretz Mitzrayim lo yadanu me'haya lo. Vayomer alehem Aharon parku nizmei hazahav asher ba'aznei neshechem benechem uvenotechem v'havi'u elai. Amen. You may be seated. And Victoria asked me, do you have a title for your talk? And I don't always have a title because I don't always know what I'm talking about in more ways than one. But I said, well, let's call this leadership styles. So I think we have a very interesting text here. And we want to put it in context, that God created humanity in His own image and likeness for a purpose. And the purpose is basically to exist, to be, to live in that image and likeness. And you may know that it hasn't worked out that well. In Talmud, there's a passage that says, from the time that God gave Adam v'Chava the commandment about not eating from the tree, from that time until they stunk from sin was 1 hour. Now, I don't know for sure that that's accurate, but however long it really wasn't a long time. So it's interesting that though God made all of creation and made humanity in His own image and likeness and said it's very good, still, there was something in humanity, in people that could be appealed to that would cause them to turn against God and turn against their own nature. And do the very thing that was wrong to do, the very thing that was guaranteed to bring them death. And some people, they say, oh, 613 mitzvot, oh, there's so many. People who say that don't know anything about law. I mean, go into a lawyer's office and look at the rows of statutes. State statutes, federal statutes, 613, and that's just rabbinic count, and I'm not sure they got it right anyway, but that's not a lot. But here, Adam and Eve, they're given one commandment. And that was a little too much for them. You know, maybe three quarters, a half, a third of a commandment. And they could have handled it. I mean, really, God expects too much of us, don't you think? But in any case, humanity went their way, and it wasn't God's way. And at a certain point, God said, you know, what we need to do now is introduce something new into the mix. So God so loved the Goyim that He created Israel to be a light to them, to bring them out of darkness into light. And this is, of course, the calling of Israel, Laor HaGoyim, or however. But if you've read the book or seen the movie, you know that Israel didn't do that well either. I mean, we really haven't done such a great job. And so it's wonderful that we can look at these three verses, because now we can find out whose fault it is. Now we can have someone to blame, which is always helpful in avoiding responsibility or growth. But so God picked Moses, and you have to understand that God wanted to redeem Israel out of slavery in Egypt, but no one else was interested. Pharaoh wasn't interested. The Egyptians weren't interested. Israel wasn't interested. Moses wasn't interested. No one was interested in what God wanted to do, because people were busy doing what they wanted to do, which, you know, I mean, let's face it, that is more important. And so anyway, Moses, I mean, I don't mean to denigrate or put down Moses in any way, but Moses, you know, God is choosing him for this leadership position, and Moses is just great. He says, God, you know, I think that's a great idea to redeem Israel. I'm with you 100%. Whoever you pick, I'm going to vote for him. And God said, but didn't you understand what I said? I picked you. And Moses said, well, yes, but whomever else you might want to pick, because really, I'm very busy. I mean, there's a lot going on in the flock. And this is not where my gifts lie. My gifts are in other things. Like, you know, doing in Egyptian taskmasters, things like that. So anyway, God and Moses negotiated. They worked it out. And so Moses heads back to Egypt. And I hope we actually get to the text. That's so that Victoria won't have written the title in vain. But so Moses heads back to Egypt with his wife and two sons, and this is the man God is sending to put an end to slavery, to bring redemption, to change the course of an empire and all the earth. And yet Moses has overlooked something. And so we're told that God sends an angel to kill Moses on the way, because Moses neglected to circumcise his sons. I mean, you know, where in the wilderness was he going to find a good moil? I mean, it was not his fault. And, you know, his wife wasn't Jewish. Let's tell it the way it is. But God had picked him, but God said, you're not going to do it like that. You know, you're going to call Israel to serve me. We're going to start with you. And God said it in a very serious way. But then things really worked out well. Moses went into Pharaoh and said, the God of Israel, the God of the Hebrews, says, let my people go. And Pharaoh said, well, I was really just waiting for the opportunity to do that. I'm glad that someone came and asked me. You know, because a lot of people, like maybe even in this congregation, they're just waiting to do something, but no one has asked them. So, anyway, I mean, it took a while to work it out. Because there were problems with the union and, you know, all kinds of things. But they worked it out. And so God brings Israel out of Egypt with a mighty, glorious deliverance into, as we would say in Quebec, a cul-de-sac. He brings them right out into a trap. Now, I mean, you have to, if you want to understand God and His leadership, you know, you try to understand what He's doing here. Because what He was doing with Israel wasn't just for Israel. What He was doing with Moses wasn't just for Moses. What He was doing with Pharaoh wasn't just for Pharaoh. God has sort of larger purposes, which for those of us who live finite lives can be a real pain sometimes, but a real privilege as well. The opportunity to be involved in what God is doing in the earth, even if we don't understand it, comprehend it, or like it. It has nothing to do with what we like. It has nothing to do with what we want. So anyway, God used that to destroy Pharaoh and the Egyptian army, and all Israel rejoiced and sang praises to the Lord and declared His glory for about, well, maybe 15 minutes. And then they started considering their situation. I mean, you think Jeff was joking about that 3-week women's retreat. Sign up with caution. I mean, you know, all Israel, they say, okay, I'm in. You know, I'm going to do the blood thing on the doorpost, on the lintel, and I'm out of here. And they thought it was like, you know, a quick trip. I mean, that's what the itinerary, the brochure, you know. But it really turned out to be much longer than that. So anyway, here we are in Exodus 31, and a lot has happened so far, but not as much as is going to happen. It's a lot more good stuff to come. But here we have like the height of a spiritual experience. The glory of God, visible glory of God, burns on top of the mountain for 7 days, and all the people see it. And then, you know, Moses and the leaders come near. They see the Lord, and you know, Moses goes up alone into the presence of God. And it was like a, you know, leadership retreat. And he was there for 40 days and 40 nights. And he hadn't told anyone how long he was going to be gone. But Moses is there in the presence of God, and God is showing him the plan for the Mishkan. God is showing him what to do with the sacrifices for atonement. God is showing him everything he needs to know to make a holy place, a mikdash, for a place for God to dwell. And also on the side, he's giving him the law. You see, God is taking Israel from being a slave people, and He's making them a nation. So He already chose Israel back in Abraham. It's not about being chosen. He already redeemed Israel out of Egypt. It's not about being redeemed. But this is a people who are going to go into a land and be a nation. God is giving Moses the law to give to Israel, to a chosen, redeemed people, so that they'll know how to live. This is not just do what you want. That's in the book of Judges, which is coming up soon enough, where every person does what's right in his or her own eyes. But actually, if you read the text closely, it's not recommended. So this is going to be a nation, a kingdom of priests, people who will function between God and other people, and between other people and God. I mean, that's some kind of job description. But that's for all Israel. And, you know, a holy nation, you know, people set apart, which means being a peculiar people, not just strange the way some of you are, but peculiar in a biblical sense. Because if you're going to walk with God, if you're going to live in this world in His image and likeness, you're going to be strange to a lot of people. Because that's not what's going on out there. But a peculiar people. So he's giving Moses the law because there's no such thing as a government without law. It doesn't exist. When, you know, he says you're going to be a kingdom of priests, people think kingdom, they're thinking Disneyland. You know, the Magic Kingdom. There are going to be a lot of interesting rides. It's not what it's about. At least in some translations. Yeah. A kingdom is a form of government with a king. It's a structure for authority. Law, and all societies have law. Once you get past, say, a tribal stage, you have law anywhere in the world. Why? Because people don't naturally do what the ruler wants them to do, no matter what it is that the ruler wants them to do. If the ruler wants them to do A, they'll do not A. If he wants them to do not A, they'll do A. That's why everywhere in the world there's law to stipulate how people should behave and to control their behavior. And there's no such thing as government, and a kingdom is a type of government, without law. So God is giving Israel law. And this is not law that they got together. Now, when is the committee meeting? You know, it's not the law they came up with. I mean, it's not like, what, an 800-page health care bill. I mean, you want to complain about 613 minutes vote? Well, I mean, here we're in Canada, but, you know, it comes out the same. This is God's law. It's to the point. It doesn't cover every incident, everything that might happen, but it does cover everything that can happen because it lays out what you need to do because God commanded, and I keep forgetting to check to see if the rabbis counted this one, but I don't think they did. God commanded, these words which I command you this day shall be upon your heart. If you don't meditate, if you don't think about God's law day and night, if it's not where your mind is, if it's not where your heart is, you're not going to understand it. You know, you think, well, okay, you build a new house, so you put a fence around the roof. You're going to think that's a building code. It's not a building code. It's v'ahavta et re'echa kamocha. It's you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Because in a hot climate, people at night are going to go up on the flat roof to cool off. And if you don't have a fence around your roof, your neighbor, and some of you have neighbors like this, your neighbor is going to fall off. And I will hold you liable. This is about personal liability. It's not a building code. It's about how to live, how to be concerned about other people and your own responsibilities with what you have. But anyway, what's this? Watch, okay. They thought it was funny when I said, you know, we were talking this afternoon about time and everything. I said, I don't really need a watch, just give me a calendar. But anyway, so Moses is in the presence of God. And he's receiving the most awesome revelation that anyone has ever had. And as we know, he comes out of the presence of God and he's just glowing with light because he's been that close to God. And so here, verse 18, God has taken these two tablets of stone, probably Laurentian marble, I would think. Yeah. But whatever they were, these two tablets of stone, and God himself has written the commandments on the tablets of stone. I mean, just think what you could get for that on eBay. I mean, you know, this is a unique item. I mean, there's nothing like it. And the encounter that Moses has with God, it's amazing. Now, while Moses is in the presence of God, Israel is not in the presence of God. And so, you know, people are looking for something to do. Like they're getting bored of playing canasta, you know, or whatever else they're doing. So, I mean, God sees all this. He knows all this, and he knows there's a rebellion taking place. But he doesn't tell Moses. He doesn't tell Moses because if he did, Moses would not be able to concentrate. You know what it's like when you're trying to pray and yet you're thinking about all these other situations and what people are doing, and it's so difficult. So God can't tell Moses this until he finishes with everything else. And he does tell him, but not in our verses, but our next verse, and you know that the chapter divisions aren't in the text. The next verse, you know, Moses is up there, he just received these tablets of the law written by the finger of God in stone, and the people are down below and they see that Moses has delayed coming. So these are very observant people. He went up there, but I didn't see him come down. Did you see him come down? You know, so, I mean, they didn't have a lot to talk about because, you know, there's really nothing going on in the wilderness where they were. But, so, Moses, come on, I mean, what, we're supposed to just stay here until he feels like coming back? I don't think so. So the people come together. They gather themselves together. Now, that's, you know, what the text says, but what it means is that she talked to her, and she talked to her, and then the three of them went and talked to them. And while they were talking to them, these three other troublemakers here were talking to those people over there. And they were gathering together to say, hey, we don't like what's going on here. We don't like the leadership. We don't like the model. This is not what we want. We're not interested in this. So let's do something about it. I mean, isn't that what you tell your people to do? You know, you see a problem, don't just pray about it. You're part of the answer to your prayer. Do something about it. So that's what the people were doing. They're doing something about this situation where they're stuck in the wilderness with nothing going on. So they come to Aaron and they say, get up and make us some gods, because as for this man Moses, you know, the guy who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what happened to him? We don't know what's going on with him. And we're really tired of waiting. Now, and Jeff didn't want me to say this, but I really have to say it. You know, some of you in this congregation, I'm not going to point at anyone, but some of you are impatient. And, you know, we're not really going to move on until you change. And the rest of us are getting tired of waiting for you. So you know who you are. All right? They're impatient. So Aaron responds to the people. And Aaron says, "What? My brother, my kid brother, who did so much for you in Egypt, and now you're just brushing him off like that?" And then Aaron says, and God who did all that for you with Pharaoh and the Egyptians and brought you out, now you want new gods? No, actually, that's not how the text reads. The text says, Moses said, "Okay, bring me the gold in the ears of your wives and your sons and your daughters," which tells us there are a lot of punks in Israel at the time. You know, I just trying to tell it like it is. But anyway, like, Aaron doesn't say anything. He doesn't speak up for Moses. He doesn't speak up for God. He just says, "Okay, yeah, bring me some gold and I'll see what I can do for you." And as he explains later to God, you know, it wasn't my fault. I just threw the gold in and out came this golden calf. I mean, you're gonna blame me for that? So, I don't know. You know, we've been involved in walking with the Lord for a while now, and I've been thinking that I might like sort of open up a counseling service. You know, I used to do a lot of counseling years ago, but like here, you see, I would go to God, and I would try to give him some sound counsel. I try to explain to him, "Look, you picked up this one dude who's going to be high priest, and he's like making a golden calf, and then you got his kid brother. I mean, you got him first, and you know how stubborn he is, and you know whatever." But later in the chapter, we read when Moses comes down and sees the people, he takes these priceless, one-of-a-kind tablets of stone on which God has written with his finger, and he throws them down and breaks them. And so that's why, Victoria, that's why this is about leadership styles. So you got Aaron, who just does whatever the people want. And you got Moses, who can't deal with anything. You know, the people are just too much for him. And so, I mean, he takes these tablets written by the finger of God, and he's just so angry, he throws them down. And so I would, and then, I mean, not to mention the people. And so I would talk to God a little bit, and I would say, "Okay, I understand you're into redemption. I understand that you want people to live as what you created them to be. But I think it's time to rethink the way you're going about this. I don't think you have the right material." to work with. I mean, you know, your number one guy, I mean, he needs to enroll in some kind of anger management program. And your high priest, who's dealing with the holy things and the holy of holies, I don't know how to break this to you. And this people that you think, these people, they're going to be a light to the nations? I don't see it. So, you know, I would try to talk sense to God. You know, to explain, like, from the vantage point of my experience, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not that great, but it's not insignificant either. I'd say, look, you know, I think maybe you need to start over. Because this is not going to work. But you see, this tells us something about God's leadership style. God's not nervous, he's not happy, but he's under control. You know, he thinks, you know, it's like plan your work and work your plan. He thinks this thing is going to work out. Well, here we are a few thousand years down the road, and, you know, I mean, I got to tell him it hasn't worked out yet. But okay, you know, but God's leadership style, he's under control. He's not nervous. If judgment has to come, judgment is coming. But it's going to be the way that he created it to be. I think about Yeshua in Yohanan, where we're told the story you know, he was with some of his talmidim there, and they come to him and they say, "Master, we saw some people casting out demons in your name, but they don't go with us, so we forbid them." Now here's real good leadership material. There are these people out there who are possessed by the devil, whose lives are totally destroyed, and so some other people come along and somehow set them free, and these guys are forbidding it because they don't have credentials with us. I mean, I don't think these guys are going to amount to much either, especially it continues on from there. Yeshua is headed towards, he's headed towards Jerusalem, but he's going through Shomron, through Samaria. And the Samaritans, which tells you something about Samaritans, you know, they saw that he had his face set towards Jerusalem, so they didn't receive him. So then, these wonderful Talmidim that Yeshua is planning to use to turn the world right side up say, "Shall we call down fire from heaven on them and destroy them?" That's always a good leadership technique. When you encounter people with whom you're having problems. You know, you see, they didn't say, okay, let's ignore them. They didn't say, let's not invite them to our picnic. They said, shall we destroy them? And this is what Yeshua is working with? But I got news for you. This is all there is to choose from. You know, the text says, don't say, oh, you know, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we wouldn't have done what they did. Who are you kidding? You might be kidding yourself, but not God. You see, people haven't changed since that initial rebellion against God. And it's a very interesting text, you know, Genesis 3, this rebellion, because they don't even consider the possibility that God has the authority to tell them what to do. They don't even consider that. They just consider the possibility of what they want, what they can get if they go their own way. And then they're going to have control of the whole good and evil thing. They'll be able to make their own law. Won't that be sweet? So, humanity hasn't changed. It's possible for an individual to change. Now, what's your name?
Diana.
Diana? Now, some of you know Diana, right? No, you don't. Well, you know, I've been watching her, and, you know, she's changed a lot since. And I really appreciate the effort she's putting out, don't you? You know, it's possible for an individual to change, but we're still stuck. Like Shaul says, who will deliver me from the body of this death? I can't get free from it. You think God didn't put Adam and Eve to death on that day? Well, yes and no. Who will deliver me from the body of this death? I want to do what's right, but I can't do it. The good that I want to do, I don't do, and the evil I don't want to do, that's what I do. Who will deliver me from the body of this death? And the answer is, hey, God has provided a way in Moshiach. But, unfortunately, God didn't do it the right way. The right way would be like a pill you take once and it's all done. It's taken care of. But God didn't do it that way. You know, it's like some of those marketing schemes where, you know, they bring you in and you become dependent on the stuff. And that's what happens. What? Okay, I know. All right, I got it. You know, that's what happens. But see, that's God's design. You can't just go to Him for help and then go on. The design was to be symbiosis. Like, you know, that little sort of stork perched on the back of the hippopotamus, the rhinoceros. You know, things that live together. They're different, but they have a living relationship. And that's the design from the beginning. God gave Adam and Chava, He gave them responsibility. He said, look, here's the whole world. How about managing it? I mean, that's an opportunity. Yeah, that's a big responsibility. So it's not like God is trying to run their lives or something, but for their lives to work, they have to be in a living relationship with Him. And so that's why, though there's absolutely nothing wrong with the law God gave Israel, or the law He gave the nations before there was an Israel, or the law He gave Adam, or the law He gave Cain, or the law He gave to the generation of Noah. Nothing wrong with that law. The problem is with the people. The problem is being like Adam, or Eve, as the case may be. And they did, I don't want to offend anyone, but they had problems. And they pass those problems on. And so a pill won't work. A pill won't work. It takes a living relationship. And so Yeshua says, and like in Jeremiah chapter 31, where God presents a new covenant, he says, you know, I'm going to do some different things in the new covenant because you guys sure messed up the covenant that I made with you at Sinai. And like in Ezekiel, he tells us some of these things. He says, you know, I'm going to take out your stony heart, which means the fact that you don't care about other people, which may mean you come in here and you have a good time and you don't notice someone else who's not having a good time. You come in here for yourself, and that's fine. It is fine, isn't it? Yeah. You know, it's fine to come in here and get something for yourself, but if you want something more lasting, you have to see other people and to see that what you really need for yourself is serving. If you want to be whole, you have got to learn to serve. I mean, Job was just minding his business and everything fell apart. And the worst thing was, then his friends came. And that was an ordeal. And so Job is complaining. It's obviously God's fault, right? Because God could have kept all this from happening. And he didn't, in fact. He sort of instigated it. It's the old cul-de-sac maneuver. But when God finally appears to Job, God doesn't answer Job's questions at all. Job says, you know, if I could have my day before God, give me an hour, I'll tell him something. But when he sees God, and God says, who are you that you think you understand what's going on? Job doesn't complain. Job said, I heard about you, but now I see you, and I don't have any complaint. I don't understand anything, but hey, I'm with you. But then God tells Job, and this is tough. He says, okay, Job, you know, I'm going to do something for you here. But before I restore your fortunes, I want you to pray for your friends. Are you kidding me? Friends? Pray for them? Are you out of your mind? I mean, this is more pain than all the rest. Well, maybe not. That might have been an exaggeration. But anyway, anything that comes from the States, you have to discount a certain percent up here. Anyway. So, but it was hard for Job. It was hard for him. But you see, forgiveness is a real important thing. It's like at the core of this whole business. And you know, if you go back to that incident in John with the Talmidim coming to Yeshua, it's like, you know, oh, you know, I'm gonna get a different temp agency. I mean, these guys are not working out. No, it's like he says, no, it's like you guys don't know what spirit you're from. Which means one of two things. It means either you don't know what the Spirit of God is like and what it means to live in the Spirit, or it means you don't understand what spirit you're showing here. It means one of those or both. But yeah, the Spirit is very important. So in the New Covenant, God gives the Spirit to us to give us the power. Unfortunately, He doesn't force us to make the right choices. But He gives us the power, as He says in Ezekiel, I'll put my Spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. And you'll keep my ordinances. Now, I haven't been here before, and after tonight, I might not get back here again. But I don't know what you think God's Spirit is for. But that's what God thinks it's for. To cause you to walk in His statutes and keep His ordinances, because they're still the right way to behave. That didn't change. You're supposed to change. So anyway, we do have different leadership. Oh, these are notes. Anyway, we do have different leadership styles. And so I want to, you know, I really want to interact with you. So I'm going to stretch the cord a little bit. And, you know, some places when they ask people to come up for prayer, they have like boxes of Kleenex. You know, because God touches you and you cry and you don't want to wipe, you know, on your... Yeah, anyway, so they have boxes of Kleenex. But see, I think, like we said the Shema, and Yeshua was asked, which is the greatest commandment of all? He said the greatest commandment is Shema. If you're not going to listen, who cares what the rest is? You have to listen. A person cannot live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. You've got to be listening. And you can't expect. I mean, look at these leaders. You want Moses and Aaron and John and whatever his brother's name was. You want those guys listening to God and you're just going to do what they say? Come on, you have a responsibility, which you will never fulfill if you're looking to leaders to do the work for you. And I think you probably have a good leader here. But the leader doesn't do the work. The text says God provides different kinds of leadership for the building up of those who are set apart for them to do the work. So, I'm not going to send anyone away. But don't come here just to listen. But anyway, listening is good. Listening is good. And what I wanted to say, I wanted to invite you to come up and pray, but as I said, some places they have like boxes of Kleenexes. When we call people up to pray, like in our fellowship, we have boxes of Q-tips. So I don't know if anyone feels like praying for anything other than that I would stop. But, you know, maybe you actually heard something from God tonight. And you see, everyone's called to be a leader. You're called to be a leader in your own life. You know, you're responsible for your decisions, not anyone else. So there are different kinds of leadership styles. We didn't cover them all, but maybe you heard something from God tonight and you want to just take a moment and pursue it a little bit. Maybe you heard something and you said, hey, you know, I'm really stuck with the people down at the bottom of the mountain. I have no idea of what is going on. I am totally clueless. It's okay. Unless you stay there. God is working in all of us so that we will desire and do what is good and pleasing in His sight. And so I'm just going to ask... here, would you take that for me? It's bothering me. No, I just want to ask if you want to come, anyone wants to come and pray, I'd be glad to pray with you, or you could pray for me, whatever seems more appropriate. But if you heard something and you are desiring more to do what's good and pleasing in His sight, and maybe something fit together, or maybe you understand that something needs to be fit together. I'm not putting a label on anything, but if you want to come and take a minute and pray, you know, I'd be glad to pray with you. It's helpful for me to pray with people. So please, if you'd like, come and we'll spend a little time.